Hello and welcome to the final recast of our holiday break for the new year. Happy New Year to you and yours. I hope your holiday season was as wonderful as ours was. Today we wrap up our recast episodes with a visit from episode 150 with Ellery Adams. I would just like to add that number 5 in this book series is called The Vanishing Shelf, and it will be published in April of 2022. Enjoy.
I'm Ann Dart.
I'm Tracy Stormy.
And I'm Kathy Knight.
And together we are
It Was a Dark and Stormy Book Club,
a podcast for mystery lovers.
Welcome.
If you enjoy our show, please consider contributing to the Dark and Stormy Patreon. By becoming a patron, you will help us create better and quality content. There are also benefits to becoming a patron, such as exclusive content and Dark and Stormy merchandise. Become a supporter at patreon.com/darkandstormybc. Check our website for the link. We appreciate any and all contributions. Thank you.
Hello, and welcome to episode 150 of Dark and Stormy Book Club. Today we visit with author Ellery Adams.
Ink and Shadows is the fourth book in the Secret Book and Scone Society series. Nora Pennington is known for her window displays, and as Halloween approaches, she decides to showcase fictional heroines like Roald Dahl's Matilda and Madeline Miller's Circe. A family values group disapproves of the magical themes, though, and wastes no time in launching a modern-day witch hunt. Suddenly, former friends and customers are targeting not only Nora and Miracle Books, but a new shopkeeper, Celeste, who's been selling CBD oil products. Nora and her friends in the Secret Book and Scone Society are doing their best to put an end to the strife, but then someone puts an end to a life. Though the death is declared an accident, the ruling can't explain the old book page covered with strange symbols and disturbing drawings left under Nora's doormat, a postcard from an anonymous stalker, or multiple cases of vandalism. The only hope is that Nora can be a heroine herself and lead the Secret Book and Scone Society in a successful investigation before more bodies turn up and the secrets from Celeste's past come back to haunt them all.
We would like to welcome Ellery Adams to the program. She has a fascinating new book, Ink and Shadows. It's going to be released today by Kensington Press. Welcome, Ellery.
Hello. It is so nice to be here, gals.
We are big fans of your books, especially Nora and her group of friends.
They're a joy to write.
This series features sort of a theme of starting over. Nora, of course, is starting over with her life. Now you've got Celeste in this book. She was starting over, and Nora kind of wants to start over with Jed. Is this part of your philosophy in your life? You can always start over?
Absolutely. I am a strong believer in second chances. I believe that we should be given them, and we should also give them to others. We all get stuck. We all take the wrong path at times. I mean, that's just part of being human. I think as I've aged, I turned 50 this year, in that 5 decades of wisdom, I'm hoping that one of the things I learned is it's never too late. I love reading about second chances in fiction because I think it's inspiring. And I think it's a great lesson, no matter what age you are, that you don't ever have to be stuck as long as you have the courage and hopefully the support to do something that other people might think is crazy. My husband and I definitely faced this a couple of years ago. He's a physician and his job was really affecting his health. He wasn't getting enough sleep. He went to this doctor and another doctor said, you're actually losing mental capacity and the ability to remember things because you don't have enough consistent sleep. And I said, you need to quit. You need to quit because this job is literally deteriorating your brain. We're going to quit and we're going to move. When you do this in your 40s, when you have two kids and you've got to save for college and you have a mortgage, it's terrifying. I said, we can do this. We're going to have a second chance at a different kind of life. And people thought we were crazy, and it was terrifying and it was really hard. We are so glad that we did it. And he has recovered most of his mental faculties. I mean, he is a guy. So no, I'm just kidding. He really is back to the person he used to be. I mean, he was really just starting to forget things. It was almost like some signs of early dementia caused by sleep deprivation, and your brain can actually heal if you get enough sleep from certain issues. And he was able to heal, thank goodness. It was really scary. At one point, we owned 3 houses and had sold none of them because we thought we were going to move to one place and the job that he was looking at fell through. This is getting worse and worse. We're supposed to be changing our lives, and now we're in debt to like 14 different banks, but we got through it.
Wow, that's really, really interesting. Actually, as soon as we get off here, I'm going to talk to my husband about that because he's very sleep deprived too.
There are a lot of professions where people don't get consistent sleep. I think that you may notice that I bring up chronic pain in this particular book, and I introduced a character, Sheldon, in the book of Candlelight, who has chronic pain. Chronic pain and insomnia, unfortunately, usually go hand in hand. It started with my husband, but I really have done a great deal of research on lack of consistent sleep and chronic pain. And of course, you know, I'm in the throes of menopause, so I know all about lack of consistent sleep. And I always find it fascinating that so many women go through this and there's so little help for us. And I think, you know, if the world's males went through menopause, there would be a pill for this.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now that you brought up Sheldon, he is truly my favorite character. I love Sheldon.
I'm so glad you like him. Some people think that he's a little too snarky for their taste. Well, he's like a teenager that never really grew up, you know what I mean?
One person that you talk about in the book is Saint Juliana, and we thought she was very interesting. We were curious on what you thought was the most interesting thing you found out about her.
I was trying to find a historical figure who had been represented in religious art, but may have been misrepresented as an actual person in oral histories and written histories. One of the themes I'm pursuing in Ink and Shadows is this idea of women who have power historically were often branded as something because they were seen as threatening. She did have more than one story and more than one different kind of portrait, depending on who was painting her. I thought this has happened over and over and over again throughout history, where women are repackaged in a way that isn't actually accurate and makes them seem dangerous, threatening, when in fact, oftentimes they were often just trying to help or to spread knowledge or to do something beneficial, but that was seen as threatening. I think I stumbled on her because I was researching characters who may have been portrayed as saints or angels. And when I saw the one representation of her with the chain around her waist, where she was chained to this devil or a dragon, I was immediately fascinated. Like, whoa, why has she got this dragon chained around her waist? I was just off to the races from there.
One of my favorite quotes in the book is regarding Juliana. And that's when the little girl says to her father, can she still be an angel if her wing is broken? And her father says, it's her heart that makes her an angel. I just thought that was so beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
Another part of your book talks about the use of CBD oils. Mm-hmm. And I am a confirmed believer and user of CBD. I feel like it's almost saved my life.
Heard that from quite a few people.
Do you perceive any negative comments regarding the use of CBD?
Do. I've tried so hard to make it clear. I think there is a misconception that CBD equals marijuana. It doesn't, because it's missing certain elements of the plant that make people high and are known as a recreational drug. I really tried to spell that out, like, look, you got to think about this as like ground up rope, not as a marijuana plant, you know, like ground up hemp. Think about it that way. There is a stigma to it. I think one of the things I really wanted to do, and I'm hoping to do, is to remove that stigma for multiple reasons. One is because it is so successful for some people. My mother is a rheumatoid arthritis sufferer. She does very well with CBD oil warmed and rubbed into her hip joints and her knuckles. One of the reasons I got interested in CBD oil was I was trying to actually find some relief for her. She's a super active person, but she was really uncomfortable and I could see her flare-ups. She's like Sheldon. She would get thick ankles. Her elbow would end up being twice the size of it was supposed to be. And this is on medication. Traditional medication doesn't always solve everything, as I'm sure you know, since you're a CBD user. Also, it can have terrible, terrible side effects. I mean, we are in an opioid epidemic. Find an alternative, and there is an alternative. I feel like that's something I want everybody to know about. And I've interviewed quite a few people with chronic pain who use it. And almost all of them, 99% of them, said they could not live without it now. They couldn't function. They couldn't be positive. No one's ever completely pain-free when you have chronic pain. They have more good days than they could have without it. And why wouldn't I want to tell people about that, right?
I really like that when you were talking about it, gave questions to ask if you're going to purchase it. And I thought that was great.
Right. And I think that that was important too, because in my research, I learned just like all the other markets, there are some bad fish selling out there, and they are selling products that either don't contain anything that will help you feel better. I mean, it would be nice if it was regulated and those sorts of people were just tossed out the window. But if we can just educate each other about how to know what to buy, then eventually those vendors will disappear because they won't have customers. If you go on Amazon, for example, and you type in CBD gummies, the amount of results is incredible. And you can start looking through those and go, this is not the real stuff. This is just a placebo for $40 a bottle. And it makes me very angry when people take advantage of people who are suffering anyway. I feel like they'll get theirs eventually, but I would just rather that people didn't spend any money on those folks.
I have one source that I buy from because I trust them and I know that I'm getting the real thing. It has made such a difference in my life since I've been taking it. It cured another whole thing different from what I was taking it for.
That is so awesome. I love those stories.
And the only change in my life was the CBD oil, so it had to be that.
Yeah, which is affordable. Another thing is, I think we all know our own bodies better than anybody else. And when something is successful, we need to stick with it. And when something isn't working, we need to be able to say, whatever you gave me, this is making me feel sick. This is making me feel worse. I don't want to do this anymore. That's part of our right to be our own patient advocates.
I'm very lucky that I have a doctor who says, if it works, keep doing it.
So I wish that kind of doctor on everyone. And I always tell people, you know, if you don't have a good relationship with your doctor, you need to change. I'm very pro healthcare workers, but I know I've been there too, where I've gone to see somebody and they've said, well, this is what you have. And I say, no, you know, I know myself now, and that's not it. Can we keep trying?
I have to tell you, Ellery, I have read every book in this series, and it has really fast became one of my favorite series.
Yes.
And part of what really draws me to this series is the friendship that Nora has with these women. It's like coming home again. And especially nowadays with us being very limited on how we commune with each other. Do you have a group of women like Nora has?
We moved from Virginia to North Carolina about 2.5 years ago. I have become friendly with people here, but I don't have a book group or things like I used to have. And I think part of what I love so much about this series is it gives me an opportunity to create friendship bonds, even though they're fictional, and then to talk about those friendships with people I don't know online. I've really made some lovely connections with people because of this series, mostly on Instagram and on Facebook, hearing their stories and which character they identify with. I guess they're kind of my way of creating a friendship circle, a reader's circle, if you will, for myself as well. I am an introvert and I do like to be at home, but I also like to have a couple of really close friends. It's hard to make new friends when you've just moved and you're older and you're not hanging out with parents from your kids' class and everybody's so busy. And then the pandemic came. I'm really kind of missing that close group of friends. My mom's here and we're super close, but it's not quite the same. So for me, they're my substitute friends right now. I know that sounds kind of bad, doesn't it?
No, like, I get it.
Ellie, you're a loser.
Anne is my mother. That's how it is with us.
Right. My mom and I are like you guys. We trade books and we analyze books and we give each other books as gifts. It's been a lifelong bond for us. I can't tell you, it's priceless.
Oh, it definitely is.
This is multi-generational. My grandmother was the same way.
Wonderful. I love that. My grandmother was more of like, I'm going to watch QVC for 24 hours. And we thought, oh boy.
This book highlights one of the age-old problems of censorship and banning of books. Do you think that's an issue in today's world, unfortunately?
I wish that it was a thing of the past, but it definitely is not. You know how you have certain hot topic buttons where even if people don't want to hear you talk about it, if this gets mentioned, you're going to go off. I am a super easygoing, non-conflict oriented person, but you start talking about banning books and I will turn into a she-devil in about 15 seconds. I think there's a long history for me of seeing different sides of this coin. I'm a parent. I'm a former teacher. I have a master's in library science. I understand the arguments that are presented, but to me, none of them are acceptable. None of them can convince me that you should remove a book from a shelf and put it away in the dark. For the most part, parents are complaining about elements in books. That is their right to do 100%. I'm certainly not judging them. They can decide what their children read, but I don't think they get to decide what is available. I would never tell a parent, hey, you shouldn't let your kid read Charles Webb. Well, actually, I might tell a parent why. I might gently suggest the glorious things that they would discover in a Harry Potter or anything like that. But if they chose not to, that of course is their right and prerogative as parents. If every parent was listened to, the shelves would be empty because the complaints are so wide, from language to characters to moral issues to religious issues. I mean, we wouldn't have any books. And
exactly.
That is my greatest fear. When that happens, we are a Ray Bradbury society and that's not where we want to go. And an interesting statistic, just that this is talking 2019 here, PBS did The Great American Reads, and the number one novel on there was To Kill a Mockingbird. And I'm sorry, that is an amazingly wonderful book. Okay, if you don't like it, that's fine. If you think that should be banned, that's great to have your opinion, and I respect everyone's opinion. But every year, that book is in the top 20 list of books that people want to be banned. Interesting two sets of stats. It's the number one favorite book in one of the biggest surveys on American literature. And yet, year after year after year, people try to censor that book. I don't get it. I mean, it makes me want to throw my hands up in the air and go, how? Really? I deliberately make sure I have banned book titles in all of my books as recommendations, because if there's one person who maybe tries it and then realizes later, oh, I would have never read that book because I heard it has this and this and this, but then ends up loving it, that would be such a wonderful triumph for books.
And now that you've brought up the books that Nora recommends, part of the series that I just absolutely love, and I actually write down some of these, are her ability to heal through bibliotherapy. I just think that's fascinating. Is that something that's really used? And how do you come up with the books that you do recommend?
Here's the funny thing. I thought that I was super brilliant and had invented this. I'm totally not super brilliant and have certainly not invented it. As a matter of fact, bibliotherapy has been around since ancient Egypt. Ramses II had a library, and glyphs over the library entrance was and translates to the place for healing. The first instance of the thought that if you come into this library, you know, papyri and scrolls and such, that you would find healing, not knowledge, not entertainment, but healing. That's the first expression of that. But it has been used since ancient times, and I don't think it's been part of our lexicon until the 20th century. And in the 20th century, they started using bibliotherapy for veterans who were suffering from PTSD. Or soldiers who had been wounded. In World War I in England, they were going around to wounded soldiers' bedsides and saying, we've got this, this, and this book for you to read. What would you like? And it was fascinating because these young men wanted to read adventure stories. But there were adventure stories like Rudyard Kipling would write in exotic locations where they were bushwhacking and finding treasure. It took them away from their pain. It became an actual program in Britain to help heal wounded soldiers. From there, it has progressed to being used in Head Start programs, in mental health facilities. I hate the term troubled teens, but just to help out teens who are facing certain challenges. And the thing is, it's not always called bibliotherapy, but for those of us who have always used books to help ourselves, we recognize that that's what it is. And there actually are a few practicing bibliotherapists. I looked this up, and I think there were like 3 in Manhattan the last time I looked. And I don't know how it works when you go for a session with them. I find that extremely fascinating, but also extremely practical. Now, obviously, a list of books is not going to cure cancer, but it may help you cope with your cancer experience. You gals have both been bibliotherapists, and you don't realize it, but every time that someone has said to you, I'm in a slump. I'm not feeling reading anymore. I need something that's going to be uplifting. And they'll describe to you what they're looking for. And I bet there have been hundreds of times where you've gone, well, try this. And then they've come back to you later and said, that was it. That's what I needed. That's all bibliotherapy is. It is getting a title to somebody, the right book in their hands when they need it. And sometimes it's not the right book for the same 2 people, but a book you read 20 years ago that you now read again, you don't like it anymore. The book didn't change, you did. So books, they're so fascinating because they never really age out. You know what I mean?
No, they don't.
And as far as the ones Nora picks, I really try to make sure that I only use books in bibliotherapy that I've read. So I have read all of the books that I mention, except some of the nonfiction titles. So sometimes I will mention some more self-help oriented books, but my stepmother is a therapist and I'll often talk to her about, well, you know, if you had a married couple who was going through a hard time, what's your go-to book right now? And I really trust her. So if she gives me a title, look it up and I'll read about it, but I won't necessarily read. I do read everything that I recommend. All the titles that are in the first 4 books so far, I've read them all.
One of the things I always look forward to in your books is your description of the window displays that Miracle Books has for different seasons and events. Are these ones you have seen used?
I make them all up, and I would love to have a bookstore so that I could design window displays. I've got a bookstore in my Book Retreat series 2. That's Eloise's bookstore, and she has window displays too. So I get to kind of design these window displays between 2 different series, and I never get tired of it. It's maybe in another life I will be a bookstore owner. Now I'm going to have to
just
settle.
A bookstore window display
right,
designer.
Right, or just window display designer.
There you go.
Right, I think I would end up like locking the door and say, I'm just going to sit here and read all the books and not let anybody in because I want the space and the coffee smell. And I think I would actually really enjoy enjoy being a bookstore owner. I wouldn't want to worry about the money side of it, which is, I think, a significant worry.
Yeah, after my dad passed away, my mother moved to New Hampshire, and she opened a used bookstore.
How fun.
Oh, I still have memories of the smells in there.
Oh, I bet.
The books were just, they were so much fun because I could go in and take any that I wanted.
I was gonna ask you, could you pick them out? Just kind of like, these are the treasures I want this visit.
Yes, definitely.
Heaven.
Nora is a very interesting protagonist, and her backstory is sad. Did you have to do research about burn victims and phantom limb syndrome?
I did. Luckily, because my husband worked at a large hospital, I'm able to interview doctors. They actually asked me, you know, do you want to come take a tour of the burn unit? I have to say I was too wimpy. I'm kind of super sensitive, and I think that I might not be able to recover from that for a long time. And the idea of having her be a burn victim actually came from a firsthand experience or just something that I witnessed. I was with my kids at this little, it's called a tomato festival. You know how so many small towns have fruit or vegetable themed festivals, and they have little rides and vendors and food stuff. And it's just a cute family activity. We had gone to one of these, and unfortunately we were in line for the funnel cakes, and a young woman tripped, and the oil for the funnel cake got all over her.
Oh no.
And she was a high schooler. She was a cheerleader. She was straight A student, just a beautiful girl. I will never forget the sound of her pain. We followed her in the newspaper, and everybody who was there wanted to donate because she was going to have a very, very long road. I thought about her. What does the rest of her life look like now? You know, she's going to have to completely go down a different road. And even though she was a high school girl, she was kind of my inspiration for Nora, just this person who was so talented and then had been completely derailed. And I guess I wanted to make her a hero, but I just didn't want a high school hero. I wanted a much older one. So that's where Nora came from, was me being at that little fair and unfortunately witnessing this young woman's accident. That are beyond just the external scarring and stuff like that. It's just, you know, there's stigmas, there's people staring at you, there's worrying about sun damage. And, you know, I just think that any time that I do research about another person's possible circumstances, it just makes me more empathetic. That's kind of my goal, is just to write these books that, yes, make people feel good and, yes, entertain them, but to just kind of say, like, look, everyone's going through something. Let's all just try to be as kind as we can be to each other.
I absolutely love how Nora's pinky vibrates.
Yes. She's a natural tingle.
Where her missing finger is. I just think that's really clever.
Well, my husband works at a VA hospital. The phantom limb thing might only be for major limbs, but apparently it's just for like any part of your body that was once there and is no longer there can have these phantom sensations. I've heard all kinds of stories from these folks, you know, that sometimes it's affected by weather. Sometimes it is sort of a premonition that they get from things. I mean, I thought, again, Nora was original, but she's not.
Are you working on any new books at the current time?
I am. I am actually working on the next Secret Book and Scone Society novel. I am really enjoying it because it's the book collector side of me gets to take front and center stage for this one. I really love collecting books, and I love beautiful book design. Particularly fond of the book design from the turn of the century, the Art Deco and Art Nouveau movement. Again, I'm kind of focusing on women who are doing something maybe outside of the box. So the kind of the first women who got involved in book design and how difficult that was for them, and also the beautiful books they designed. So I also learned that it was a thing in the late 19th century and early 20th century to sometimes put little codes in book covers. So I thought, oh, beautiful books with codes. I could use that. That's what the next one's going to be focused around. And there's going to be a big shocker when it comes to Estella. Some things are going to be shaking up for Nora too. So Yeah, we can't let these people be complacent. I got to mess with them.
Maybe a little more romance in her life?
Or maybe a different one.
Oh! Now you've really compelled me.
Oh, now. See, I was upset when certain things happened in this book that I won't say because it'll be a spoiler. I was happy at the end.
Well, I can't let you stay that way. That's just wouldn't be.
I'll just have to wait, I guess.
Can you give your website so our listeners can find you and your books?
Oh, of course. So I'm at www.EllaryAdamsMysteries.com. I do have reader's guides posted online for anyone who wants to use them for book clubs. If you'd like to see all of the books that I mention in the bibliotherapy, I've got them in nice orderly lists that you can just print out. And I also have them by topic. So if you wanted to go under there and say, okay, I'm looking for books on hope, or I'm looking for books on organization, or books on how to talk to my teenage daughter, hopefully I'll have a topic on there. And as the series keeps growing, there'll be more topics. So, and if there's something that you really feel like is missing, you know, let me know. You can find me. I'm on Facebook under Ellery Adams Author, and I spend lots of time on Instagram. I'm just there under Ellery Adams because that place gives me an excuse to talk about books all the time and to post pictures about books because I obviously live, breathe, eat, and write books.
I follow you on Twitter, and you put some great stuff on Twitter.
Thank you. I think I'm going to scale back on Twitter only because I just don't seem to interact with people as much there. So I'm kind of going.
We have that issue too.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it was just because of this year and it was seemed so politically focused. And I just got mentally exhausted from that. I just went, where can I go hide and talk about books? And for me, that's really become Instagram. It has been a very positive, cheerful, book-focused place for me where I haven't had a single argument with somebody.
In this current environment in the world, that's saying
that's
something.
It's miraculous. I can't say the same thing about Facebook. So Instagram's like my happy book bubble.
Okay, that's good to know.
Whenever you approach a new social media, it seems so huge and so scary. And I find Instagram to be photo-focused. It is also very community oriented, which seems strange. The Bookstagram community is actually, even though there, you know, there's like a million users or something like that, it is actually very small. So if you start connecting with people who like the same genre as you, or do podcasts about books, or any common thread, you'll see those same kinds of posts all the time, and you guys will start talking to each other. And it's incredible how quickly you can be invited into a community and included. And I just find it to be such a positive place. And if you ever need an advice, just reach out to me.
As you were talking, I was like, I wonder what books Nora would recommend for somebody who is new to Instagram.
I could certainly do a person who is new to social media. Since my kids are always teasing me because they're like, please don't ever get on TikTok. And I'm like, oh, don't you worry. Yeah. I have no interest in getting on TikTok. And if I say anything about technology, that they call me boomer, even though I'm like, I am not of the boomer generation. Like, you know, I'm Gen X. And they're like, no, Mom, you don't understand. We're calling you boomers because we're trying to insult you. You don't know technology. Yeah, my parents, I have to say, are extremely adept at technology, so I get very defensive on their behalf.
Tell them the podcaster you were just talking to is in her 70s, and she's...
Yeah, see? I mean, they write you guys off, but, you know, I've tried to tell them all the time that, you know, that generation that you guys are always saying stuff about is probably the most resilient an adaptive generation of us all. So
they wouldn't have gotten as far as they have or taken the lumps for them before they got there.
Well, Ellery, thank you so much for agreeing to come on the show. I love this series, and I can't wait to see where Nora takes us.
All right. Well, I hope you keep reading, and anytime you want to reach out to me, I'm always here.
Well, thank you very much. You've got three good fans in our group.
All right.
And we're hoping to introduce our readers who haven't read you yet, her, and I think you'll have a lot more.
Well, thanks for having me. You guys have a great great day.
You too. Thanks, right. Ellery.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Ellery was a sheer delight. And we so love all of her books. And we hope if you haven't read her, please go check out her website and learn more about her. We would once again like to thank Ellery Adams for joining us on the program. We hope you join us next week for another fun episode of Murder and Mystery.
Well, that wraps up our recast of episode 150. That wraps up our holiday recasts for the 2021-2022 holiday season. We will return with live episodes next week, and we hope you'll join us then. Happy New Year!